Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Hey everyone, Craig Baird here. Before I begin today's story, I want to take a moment and ask that you check me out on Patreon at www.patreon.com/CanadaEHX. There are several tiers with great benefits, from ad-free content to t-shirts and other cool stuff. And if you're a fan of Canadian History X, make sure you check out my other shows, From John to Justin and Canada, A Yearly Journey. And don't forget, you can also donate directly to the show at www.canadaehx.com. It helps keep this show going. All right, on with the show. If you're like me, hearing the opening notes of that theme song instantly takes you back to your childhood, sitting in front of the family television. It's a nostalgic feeling that's so good, well, just put it in an IV and shoot it straight to my veins. But the show was so much more than just a great song. It tackled issues such as social conflict, prejudice, and personal identity. Its creator even said it could end wars. Unfortunately, it hasn't accomplished that yet, but it remains a beloved program that allows us to dance our cares away and leave our worries for another day. Let the music play and join me, Craig Baird, here on Canadian History X as I share the story of Fraggles, Doozers, and Gorgs and their lives on Fraggle Rock. When I first said I would be working on an episode about Fraggle Rock, several people told me they didn't even realize it was Canadian. Nearly everyone assumed it was an American show because the man behind it was Jim Henson. A television legend, Henson developed the revolutionary children's show Sesame Street, appeared on the first season of Saturday Night Live, and created The Muppet Show in the mid-1970s, one of the best shows ever made in my opinion. By the early 1980s, he moved into films with The Muppet Movie and The Great Muppet Caper, which were loved by critics and audiences alike. This success gave Henson the freedom to work on a passion project, 1982's The Dark Crystal, which he co-directed with Frank Oz. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it's because it's really hard to talk about Henson without Oz, who's best known for his performances as Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear, Animal, Sam the Eagle, Cookie Monster, Bert, Grover, and of course, Yoda. Dark Crystal was his directorial debut, and it was a big departure from Henson's earlier work. Though marketed as a family film, it was a much darker story with unsettling characters like the Sketskys, and a serious message about environmental destruction and the need to find balance with the natural world. The film received mixed reviews. Many critics didn't like the film's serious and dramatic tone and felt it missed the Henson-Oz trademark of giddy, playful fun. Whatever they thought of the story, the visuals were praised for their use of animatronics, which were considered groundbreaking for the time. And while the film did turn a profit, it was still seen as a financial failure by the studio. And like so many great films, it would be decades before it was truly appreciated by audiences. For his next project, Henson decided to find a middle ground between Sesame Street and The Dark Crystal, a TV show that it could appeal to both children and adults with complex messages and engaging stories. The idea became Fraggle Rock. Founded in 1972, Home Box Office, known as HBO, was looking to venture into scripted television, and since it was the first television service to be transmitted and distributed to individual cable television systems, it primarily broadcast boxing, hockey, and baseball, and other media such as comedy specials and movies. This was decades before the channel became known for creating groundbreaking television like Deadwood and The Sopranos. Wanting to get his show off the ground, Henson started to pitch his show to networks. He had spent the previous decade and a half working with broadcasters like NBC and ABC, and this time he wanted more creative control over his work and hoped HBO would promise him that. He told them his new show would end war. This was a bold claim, but it worked. HBO approved his pitch on the spot, and since it was their first scripted television show, they didn't want to go it alone. Henson agreed because he had a network already in mind to bring in as a partner, CBC. While he had never worked with a national broadcaster before, Henson liked what he heard about the atmosphere and the relative hands-off approach of the network to most of its programming at the time. Having someone like Jim Henson was also huge because it would give prestige in the industry for CBC. So they agreed to co-produce the show and film it at their Toronto studios. They had one requirement. The show had to hire Canadian writers and puppeteers. And with that, Henson got to work building the world that would become Fraggle Rock. When you first hear the concept, it kind of sounds like a fever dream. So follow me here. There were four intelligent species that exist within the Fraggle Rock universe. Fraggles are small creatures that live a carefree life, spending their time playing, exploring, and really just enjoying themselves. Their entire work week consists of only 30 minutes. They may be onto something there. The Fraggles live in a system of natural caves called Fraggle Rock that are filled with all manners of creatures and features and which connect to two very different areas. The land of the Groggs, which they consider part of the universe, and outer space, our world. Alongside these carefree creatures are the Doozers, which are pudgy, small creatures, shorter than Fraggles, that are their complete opposites. Doozers dedicate their lives to working and industry. They operate tiny construction equipment, wear hard hats, and build scaffolding within Fraggle Rock. The material they use to build their structures is made up of ground-up radishes, the favorite food of Fraggles. And as soon as the Doozers build their structures, the Fraggles eat them. Hidden within this silliness, though, is the message that Henson was trying to get to his viewers. The idea that everything needs to work in harmony. Without the symbiotic relationship between the Fraggles and the Doozers, the world and the caves would fall apart. This concept was demonstrated in an early episode when Fraggles are prevented from eating the Doozers' work. The imbalance causes construction to fill Fraggle Rock, and forces the Doozers to think about leaving the caves since there was nowhere else left to build. To stay, the Doozers need the Fraggles to eat what they build. As one Doozer says, architecture is meant to be enjoyed. The constant supply of food from the construction material also allows the Fraggles to live their carefree lifestyle. But the Doozers also need the Fraggles to steal radishes from the Garden of the Gorgs so they can build their structures. And did I mention the Gorgs? They are creatures that live outside the caves of Fraggle Rock. These large, furry humanoids stand 15 feet tall. There is only three Gorgs, Ma, Pa, and Junior, who live as farmers and grow radishes which they use to make anti-vanishing cream to prevent them from disappearing, and the Gorgs consider Fraggles to be pests because they steal their crops. And within the Gorgs' property is Marjorie the Trash Heap, a sentient compost pile who the Fraggles claim knows all and sees all. Marjorie champions this notion whenever she states that she contains everything. She often serves as an oracle, providing sage, motherly advice to Fraggle seeking wisdom. She was usually joined by her companions, two rats named Philo and Gunge. The other world connecting via a portal to Fraggle Rock is Outer Space, which is their name for our world. This is where a human inventor named Doc and his Muppet dog Sprocket live. Sprocket often sees and chases the Fraggles, but can't convince Doc of it, and so they live in an eternal cycle of misinformation and frustration, which is often softened by how much they care for each other. Henson intended this world to be appealing to a global audience, and with the Fraggle Rock world idea complete, he had to make it a reality, and for that, he turned to the deep well of very talented Canadian writers.
In 1948, the people in the British colony of Newfoundland faced a choice. They could become an independent dominion within the British Empire, or they could vote to join Canada in Confederation.
The anti-Confederates are not going to get away with it.
But St. John's was an anti-Confederate headquarters.
Watch in particular the attractive bait which will be held out to lure our country into the Canadian mousetrap.
Listen to the Stories Behind the History podcast for our special series, How Did Newfoundland Join Canada? Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
In the 1980s, Barry Philip Nickel, known as B.P. Nickel, was one of the most celebrated poets in Canada. Born in 1944 in Vancouver, his early writing consisted of fiction and lyrical poems. In the 1960s, though, he transitioned into concrete poetry, where the poems are shaped so the words themselves depict the subject on the page and are more of a visual rather than a verbal experience of the written word. For the next few decades, he wrote countless poems and other works. He won the highest literary award in Canada, the Governor's General Award for Poetry, in 1970. His best-known work was a two-decade project called Martyology, which investigated the concept of language. In a move that likely caught several people off guard, Henson turned to one of Canada's greatest and most experimental poets to be one of the first writers on Fraggle Rock. Over the course of the show, he wrote 10 episodes, including the critically acclaimed episode, The Secret of Convincing John, from Season 2. The episode centers on Wembley, one of the five main characters and the best friend of the show's protagonist, Gobo Fraggle. Wembley's indecisive nature nearly gets Gobo seriously injured, and he decides that convincing John is the only Fraggle in the Rock to get him to be more decisive. Convincing John's technique for persuasion involves a catchy song, assisted by his backup singers, the Fraggolettes, which outlines an awful fate should his listeners fail to heed his advice. In the episode, Wembley changes his name to Wilfred and decides to take on everyone else's jobs and becomes a bit of a problem, and it's up to convincing John to change him back to normal. B.P. Nickel was the mind behind that episode, and exactly what Henson needed. He wanted a show that was silly and wonderful, and in his words, a high-energy musical romp. He didn't want sitcom writers. He wanted writers who pushed boundaries and could write episodes that were high concept and appealed to all ages. Along with B.P. Nichols, Sugit Varghese was brought into the writer's room and wrote 10 episodes of Fraggle Rock. Unknown mostly at the time, he was discovered by Henson collaborator Larry Merkin, who had produced his first two scripts, an episode of a Cold War spy television series called The Phoenix Team in 1980, and CBC's first multiracial romantic comedy titled Best of Both Worlds in 1983. He said of working on Fraggle Rock, quote, "I had to present throughout, from table reads through final cut, sometimes during the edit as well. That was the job. I had to be ready to rewrite as needed during the taping, which took 3 days." Like so many others involved in the show, being hired on Fraggle Rock proved to be his big break into the entertainment industry. As I mentioned before, Jim Henson wanted Fraggle Rock to be a high-energy musical romp, and for that, he turned to Philip Balsam and writer Dennis Lee. Philip Balsam was a Canadian songwriter, composer, and author. Prior to Fraggle Rock, he created musical work for theater, and Henson's show would provide him with a new opportunity to try something new. Dennis Lee was already well known as a gifted poet. He won the Governor General's Award for Poetry in 1972, and in the mid-1970s, he began writing for children with the goal of, quote, "reclaiming language and liberating imagination," end quote. His children's poems are about the daily language and activities of kids that expanded into the realm of imagination and fantasy. In 1974, he released his most famous work, Alligator Pie, a book of children's poetry illustrated by Frank Neufeld, which won Book of the Year from the Canadian Library Association in 1975 and earned him the moniker of Canada's Father Goose. Henson also hired Bernie LaBarge, a session musician, to help with the music of the show. LaBarge had been performing since the late 1960s. In 1981, his single, Dream Away, earned him a Juno Award, but he said it was when he was hired for Fraggle Rock that he realized he had reached the big leagues. With gifted musicians and two winners of the Governor's General Award, Henson was creating a dream team with a deep well of talent for his new show. Now, he needed performers who would bring his vision of Fraggles doozers and grogs to life. Henson leaned on various performers from The Muppet Show and Sesame Street, with whom he had worked with for years. But he also hired numerous Canadian puppeteers. Most of them were new to the industry and excited to be working with a legend like Henson. Two puppeteers, Cheryl Wagner and Bob Stutt, would go on to be part of today's special, another iconic Canadian children's show, which takes place inside a major department store where each night, Jody, the store's display designer, arrives for work and carries a mannequin, Jeff, upstairs, where Muffy, a very special mouse, says the magic words, Hocus Pocus Alamagocus, which brings Jeff to life. Wagner was the performer behind Mrs. Pennypacker, also known as simply Mrs. P from 1984 to 1985, who works in the store's stockroom, while Stutt would go on to perform as Mort, Muffy's cousin, starting in 1983. But before that ever happened, they had to get Fraggle Rock on air. In Henson's vision, each of the Fraggles and Doozers would be operated by one person. However, the huge Gorgs required two puppeteers. One performer would be in the costume, while another operated the face by remote and provided the voice. Ma Gorg was operated by two Canadians. Trish Leeper was in the costume, while Myra Fried controlled the face and voice. She would eventually be replaced by Cheryl Wagner following the first season. Junior Gorg's voice and face were handled by American Richard Hunt, but the body was brought to life by Canadian Rob Mills. Pa Gorg's two-person crew were made up of American Jerry Nelson, who operated the face and did the voice, and Canadian Gord Robertson serving as the puppeteer within the costume. Now, to cast Doc, the only human character on the show, Henson had to find someone who could be a kind and grandfatherly presence, and he found him in Gerard Parks. Gerard Parks was born in Dublin, then immigrated to Toronto in 1956, and 3 years later began working for CBC Radio in 1959, before he shifted to television and film. His early resume included shows such as the 1960s ecological adventure series The Forest Rangers and The Littlest Hobo, a children's series based on the well-known 1958 movie of the same name. In 1968, he won the Etrog, later renamed The Gemini, for his portrayal of Uncle Matthew in Isabel. This is a movie about a woman who learns of her mother's serious illness and returns to her family's farm on the Gas Peninsula, where she begins seeing ghosts and spirits. He was known for mostly playing serious roles at the time, and when he saw the audition notices for Fraggle Rock at the CBC, he thought it was just a show about rock music, and he had no intention of auditioning. But then, Jim Henson happened to walk by while they were both at the CBC building, and Henson stopped dead in his tracks. He went up to Parks and asked him if he was going to audition for the role of Doc, which Parks replied he wasn't, and Henson insisted he should. Henson had found his Doc. With that in place, it was time to let the music play and introduce the world to Fraggle Rock. Fraggle Rock burst onto television screens on January 10, 1983. The series premiere was titled Beginnings. Directed by Jim Henson, it follows Doc, an inventor and tinkerer, as he moves into a new workshop in a seaside town with his faithful dog, Sprocket. Unbeknownst to Doc, a hole in the wall connects the magical world of Fraggle Rock to the outside world. Uncle Traveling Matt, a Fraggle explorer, discovers the hole that leads to Doc's workshop and identifies it as outer space, the final frontier for Fraggledom, and decides to discover this new world. He leaves his nephew Gobel behind, but lets him know that he'll send postcards to Doc's workshop of his travels. Then Gobel watches Uncle Matt venture into the workshop, where he's chased by Sprocket, leaving him terrified of having to return every few days to get Matt's message. The episode set the tone for the series, as Uncle Matt sends postcards describing the human world as the silly creatures of outer space. It also sets up the reoccurring joke that Doc's dog Sprocket sees Gobel going into the workshop, but Doc never does. Almost immediately, this show became a critical darling. McLean wrote of the show, "Few half hours have been delivered anything akin to magic. The imaginary kingdoms beamed out from the two have tended to be middle American living room sets decorated in Burbank, until Fraggle Rock." Mark Schulgold with the Los Angeles Times wrote, "Quality and imagination, that is what sets the show apart from Kitty Fair." The first season had 24 episodes airing on HBO and CBC, but it wasn't making waves in the United States among general audiences. but it was picking up plenty of awards. Following its first season, it won the International Emmy for Best Children's Show and the Cable Ace Award for Best Program Series, Children's or Family Programming, and the soundtrack won a Grammy. For The Only Human Face, it also meant newfound fame. Gerard Parks had acted steadily for a quarter century, but now he was suddenly recognized in Canada. In between seasons, while at the Rose and Crown pub in Edmonton, two men called him over and said he looked like the guy from Fraggle Rock. He replied, "I am the guy from Fraggle Rock. Only trouble is, they didn't believe me." While he wasn't portraying Doc, Parks acted in more serious productions such as Draw, Spasms, and Night Heat. But for him, Fraggle Rock was something that helped deal with more difficult roles and described it as a tonic, saying, quote, "It is tremendous fun. I love doing it," end quote. And although he believed it would prevent him from being seen as a serious actor, he jokingly said that he may never be invited back to the Stratford Shakespeare Festival again. Maybe he didn't go back to Stratford, but for children like me, there was no one cooler than Doc and his dog Sprocket, because they got to be part of Fraggle Rock. For the next 4 years, Fraggle Rock continued to delight children in Canada and in the United States for children whose parents paid for HBO. There were many adults who loved the show too and didn't mind the escapades of Fraggles, Doozers, and Gorgs. In season 2, writer and comedian Sandra Chamas joined the show as a puppeteer, which proved to be her big break in the entertainment industry. She went on to be nominated for the Governor General's Award and the Stephen Leacock Award, and won a Gemini Award in 1991 for Best Performance in a Comedy. In January 2018, she was appointed to the Order of Ontario. Meanwhile, Fraggle Rock went on to be broadcast to 95 countries around the world, creating a devoted international fan base that exists to this day. And with each season, Fraggle Rock continued to collect the hardware. It won a second Cable Ace Award in 1984 for Best Children's Show, followed by another in 1987. It also received nominations in the same category in 1985 and 1988. In 1985, it won the Actor Award for Best Writing for a Television Comedy or Variety Show, a category in which the show had another nomination. The Actor Awards, founded in 1972, were the precursor to the Gemini Awards that honored the best in television and radio in Canada. The next year, it picked up Best Children's Series at the first Gemini Awards. It was also nominated that year for Best Direction in a Comedy or Variety Program or Series. In 1987, it was nominated again, but this time it lost to Degrassi Junior High in the Children's Series category. It also picked up a nomination for Best Writer in a Comedy, but lost that to The Canadian Conspiracy. And those awards proved to be the last for the show. As critically acclaimed and beloved as it was, the fact was the show was expensive to make and HBO wanted out. Jim Henson was also ready to move on to something else. He'd recently released Labyrinth in 1986 and was starting work on his folklore-oriented show, The Storyteller. But Fraggle Rock remained extremely popular in Canada, but there was no way that CBC could carry the high production cost on its own, and the decision was made in December 1986 to end the show after 5 successful seasons and 96 episodes. CBC did not share the news until July 1986, when a press release stated the 5th season would be the last. Jack Crane, director of entertainment for CBC at the time, said, "This is a big disappointment, no doubt about it. I'd have liked Fraggle Rock to go on forever." The last episode aired on March 30th, 1987. In that episode, titled Change of Address, Doc finally sees Gobo in his workshop and has a conversation with him. The two become friends, and Gobo tells Doc that Fraggles call humans silly creatures, for which he apologizes. Doc replies that silly creatures is a good name for humans. And so ended one of the most enchanting shows ever made. Or did it? There's no doubt that Fraggle Rock was life-changing for many. B.P. Nichol found he really enjoyed writing for children's shows and lent his literary talents to the Care Bears, the Raccoons, and Babar. 5 days before his 44th birthday in 1988, though, he died suddenly at the age of 43. Jim Henson continued to make critically acclaimed television shows for the next few years, including The Jim Henson Hour, which earned him another Emmy to put on his shelf. On May 15, 1990, Henson woke up with trouble breathing and coughing up blood. 2 hours later, he went to the hospital where he suddenly stopped breathing and was rushed into intensive care. At 1:51 a.m., Jim Henson died of streptococcal toxic shock syndrome. Dennis Lee continued to work with Henson, even co-writing Labyrinth with him, and 6 years after Fraggle Rock was cancelled in 1993, a number of songs Lee co-wrote with Philip Balsam were released on the album Fraggle Rock, Music and Magic. That same year, he received the Order of Canada. 8 years later, he was named Toronto's first Poet Laureate, and he continues to write to this day from his Ontario home. Philip Balsam went back to writing for theater, including musical theater versions of the books of Mordecai Rickler's books, Jacob Tutu and the Hooded Fang, and Jacob Tutu and the Dinosaur. He died on March 31st, 2023. Sugath Verichese continued to write for television, but made a name for himself as an actor in the late 1980s. His acting credits include reoccurring roles on Little Mosque on the Prairie, Kim's Convenience, and Transplant. Among the performers on Fraggle Rock, most continued to work as puppeteers to great success. Trish Leeper went on to work for Sesame Street Canada, Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, and the 2011 remake of The Thing. Rob Mills worked on Dinosaurs and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze. Gord Robertson continued to work for Jim Henson Productions, while also doing movie work for shows such as The Neverending Story 3, Cats and Dogs, and Turkey Hollow. He also did work on Sesame Street Canada. Cheryl Wagner went on to create The Big Comfy Couch, which ran from 1992 to 2006 and became another beloved show for a generation of children. She brought on several Fraggle Rock performers to serve as puppeteers and writers on the show, including Robert Mills and Bob Stutt. In fact, it was Mills, Radical Sheep Production Company, that co-produced the show. Gerard Park continued to act after Fraggle Rock in dramas and comedies. In 1999, he portrayed a Tourette's syndrome-afflicted bartender in The Boondock Saints. That character's name, of all things, was Doc. He reprised the role in the sequel in 2009. Parks died on October 19, 2014, 3 days shy of his 90th birthday. And as I teased earlier, we weren't done with the world of Fraggle Rock. There's a whole generation who remember Fraggle Rock in the 2020s, and they get that same shot of nostalgic dopamine I did whenever I thought about it. The entertainment industry wasn't able to forget one of Jim Henson's most beloved creations, and efforts were made to revive it. A series of shorts called Fraggle Rock, Rock On, were released in April 2020 to great success. 1 month later, it was announced that Fraggle Rock would get a reboot to launch in the 21st century. Filming on Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock, commenced in Calgary at the Calgary Film Center on January 25, 2021. American actress and singer Lily Cooper would portray Doc, and directors for that first season included Canadian comedian Sabrina Jalisse. Almost a year later, Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock launched on Apple TV Plus with 13 episodes. A special holiday episode was released in November of that same year. 2 years later, on March 29, 2024, a second season was released on the streaming service, and 5 of the 13 episodes were helmed by Canadian director Jordan Canning. This new Fraggle Rock was also critically acclaimed. It currently has a 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes and earned 4 Emmy nominations, with one win at the first Children and Family Emmy Awards. And the Fraggles weren't relegated to Apple TV+. As part of the promotion tour for the latest season, they dropped by Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen, where Red and Gobo were the bartenders for the night of the Bravo Clubhouse with guests Brooke Shields and Elizabeth Hurley. And Fraggles certainly made it to outer space and began to hang out with the stars. I hope you enjoyed that episode and our look at Fraggle Rock. Next week, we're looking at the Nootka Crisis. This show is researched, produced, and written by me, Craig Baird, with the help of Dila Velasquez. Audio production and design by Rosalind Kufor. If this is your first time listening and you like what you heard, please take a moment and give us a 5-star review to help other people find these amazing stories. And there are so many for you to sink your teeth into. If you enjoy this podcast, then please check out my other podcasts, From John to Justin, Canada, A Yearly Journey, Pucks and Cups, and Canada's Great War. We love hearing from you, so if you have a show topic you want me to cover, email me at craig@canadaehx.com or stop by my website and social media. I'll include all of those in my show notes. Until next time, I'm Craig Baird, and this is Canadian History X.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.